and 9, the theme of the Gospel of John is the deity of Jesus Christ. The function of John's Gospel is stated in Acts chapter 20, or John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, and many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written, that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life through his name. In John's Gospel account, through the lens of John, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, we see Jesus demonstrating time and time again his deity. And we see throughout the book of John his person being illustrated. All through the Gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we see Jesus interacting with the people, declaring and demonstrating who he is, making pronouncement about his deity. And these are all supported by his power, and they are expressed by his miracles. From John 21 in verse 25, we see that the miracles of Jesus were countless, innumerable. And there are also many other things which Jesus did. Notice those words, which Jesus did. The which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. The miracles of Christ were God-designed to authenticate the mission of Christ, to promote and to strengthen faith in God's people, to portray the needs of man and the salvation and the sufficiency that is in Jesus Christ. The miracles of Christ are a reminder to you and I of his being, of his character, of his attributes, of his power, of his purposes. And his miracles link him to us and link him to our needs. The miracles of Christ reveal that he is the magnificent and incomparable one. They are a revelation that he is God's provision. He is God's remedy for man. They are a revelation that he is the answer. He still is. Whatever your problem is today, he's the answer. The miracles of Christ, as you read them, they are acts of love, acts of grace, acts of mercy, revealing to us the absolute sovereignty, dominion, preeminence of Christ. They also illustrate the providing, enabling, transforming power of Christ. Miracles of Christ are actual events. They're things that really happened. They are very significant. They are of great variety. They occur in everyday life. And they meet very definite and very specific needs. So through his miracles, we see Jesus making a difference that only he can make. In the book of John, chapter 8, verse 58, And we want to read down through verse 11 of chapter 9. Jesus said unto them, the Pharisees in the temple, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Those are powerful words. Then took they up stones to cast at him. But Jesus hid himself. That doesn't mean he ran behind the table. It means that he made himself invisible and notice and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them. That's a miracle. And so passed by. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him, that is, this blind man. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground, and he made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay, and said unto him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore and washed, and came seeing. The neighbors therefore, those who are familiar with this man, and they which had before had seen him that he was blind, said, is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he's like him. But he said, I am he. I am he. Therefore said they unto him, How were thine eyes opened? He answered and said, a man that is called Jesus made clay, anointed mine eyes, and said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Here in John 9, we have the privilege of beholding one of the countless miracles of Jesus Christ. By way of background, we see in John chapter 8, from verse 2, that Jesus goes into the temple. And early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and he taught them. So Jesus is in the temple in John chapter 8. He's sitting, he's teaching, and in doing so he declared many wonderful truths concerning himself. Truths that infuriated the Pharisees. And in verse 58, he says unto them in a very clear and unmistakable way, before Abraham was, I am. They were gloating in the fact that they were the children of Abraham. And he said, before Abraham was, I am. And in verse 59, so infuriated at what they saw as blasphemy, they took up stones to cast at him. But Jesus makes himself invisible and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them. And as he does so, chapter 9, verse 1, he saw a man, probably at one of the gates of the temple. It really doesn't matter. What matters is he saw a man. And this man was blind. And he was blind from his birth. No one had to tell Jesus this. He knew this. Jesus sees him. He sees him from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. He sees him from the inside and out. Jesus, he saw a man. And in my own mind, I picture Jesus standing still. And he's looking at this man. And he's looking at him with a heart full of tenderness and love and grace and mercy. He's looking at him with very special interest. In verse 2, his disciples, who no doubt followed him in a miraculous way out of the temple, asked him a question concerning this man. Jesus is looking at this man. Now they see him and they ask a question. And their question was based upon their own erroneous assumptions and conclusions. Their assumption was that since this man was blind, he either committed a sin and God was punishing him for his blindness, or his parents had committed a sin and this man was being punished for his blindness. But in verse 3, Jesus informs them that not all disease, that not all defects and suffering comes as a result of personal sin. That is, not all sickness, not all disease is a punishment. There's a lot of God's people that need to learn that lesson. That was the problem Job's friends had. So, he goes on to say the purpose of this man's defect was that the works of God would be manifest in him. And then in verse 4, Jesus makes a statement. And it serves as both an introduction and an explanation of what he was about to do concerning this blind man. He says there in verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me. So what Jesus was about to do was a work that God sent him to do. What Jesus was about to do was the very work of God. And then in verse 5, he makes another statement about himself. But it concerns this blind man. He said, I am the light of the world. That's what this blind man needed. He needed light. And Jesus is basically saying, you see that blind man? All you're concerned about is why he's blind. But I'm here to tell you, I'm what he needs. And that's how people are. People get all concerned about why. Why? Why? And what we need to know is Jesus is what they need. He is saying here, regardless of your assumptions, regardless of your erroneous conclusions, I am what this man needs. And I'm here to fulfill his needs. That brings us to verse 6 and 7, where we have the record of Jesus healing this man. The entire chapter centers around this healing of this blind man. The most of the chapter is given to the discussion that preceded the miracle. In this message, we want to center our thoughts upon the healed man's initial response to the question of the people. Their question was, how were thine eyes opened? And his response was, a man that is called Jesus. He that was sightless, but now with seeing eyes, he is saying, it was Jesus. It was Jesus. How did you become this way? Seeing. And he says it was Jesus. He is saying Jesus is the reason that I have gone from blindness to sight. He did not say it's the prayers of the people. He said it was Jesus. And that's the subject. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. That needs to be engraved upon our hearts. We that are saved. It was Jesus. We're going to look at the healing of this man. Again in verse 4, Jesus declares that he came to do the works of God. Consider the stage upon which Jesus came. He came to the place of death. He came to the place of darkness and unrighteousness, and wretchedness, and thirst, and brokenness. Came to the place of sickness, and disease, and desperation, and helplessness, and weakness, and destitution. He came to the place of distress and sorrow, heartache, and agony, fear and defeat. He came to the place where Satan roams. To do what? The works of him that sent me. Aren't you glad? Jesus came to this world to do the works of him that sent me. And that's what he does here in our text. The condition of this man in verse 1, we see that he was blind. His blindness is confirmed over and over throughout the chapter. In fact, we're told 12 times in the chapter that this man was blind. Seems to me that John wanted us to understand that this man was blind. 12 times. Verse 1, verse 2, verse 6, verse 8, verse 13, 17, 18, 19, 20, 24, 25, and 32. We're told that he was blind. His condition was one of darkness. Darkness, of course, throughout the Bible represents sin, and ignorance, and sorrow, and misery. That which is satanic. It's a picture of death. It is used to represent the state of the unregenerate in 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 4 and 5. And this is illustrated throughout the Word of God, this darkness. And this man, we're told, was blind from birth. And we're told that 5 times in the chapter. Verses 1, verse 2, verse 19, verse 20, and verse 32. 5 times we are told that he was blind from birth. That means the only thing he ever knew was darkness. You're here and unsaved today. The only thing you've ever known is that condition. Because you were born, you've been that way from birth. And without a doubt, if you're born with something, you become accustomed to it. Unsaved sinner, you've become accustomed to your unsaved condition. That's a sad place to be. When God begins to work on your heart, you won't feel so comfortable in that condition. But this man no doubt became accustomed to the darkness. Due to his blindness, there were difficulties in his life. He had some confusion in his life that a person who could see did not have. He would stumble where a person who could see would not stumble. There were certain dangers, there were certain risks as a result of his blindness. He was vulnerable due to his blindness. No doubt there was some fears that a person who could see might not have. His life was very confined. But he didn't know any better. He was blind from birth. You that are here and unsaved, your life is confined. But you don't know any better. Because that's the way it's been ever since you've been here. So you don't know any different. His blindness, without a doubt, had robbed him of some joy, some experiences in life, caused him to miss out on some things in life, greatly impaired his life. And if you're here and lost, all that is true of you today. But being this way from birth, he really wasn't fully aware of what he was missing. He'd never seen before. So he really wasn't fully aware of what he was missing. So it is with a lost sinner. They've been lost. They've been unsaved from conception. They don't know any different. They don't know what they're missing. We also see that he was a beggar. We read in verse 8 that he sat and begged. He lived a life of destitution. His life was marked by lack and shortage. It was a life of emptiness, a life of meager living. And there he is, sitting in his darkness. Jesus comes where this man was. There he is. We'll put him over here. He's sitting. Sitting in the darkness of blindness. Sitting in the destitution of poverty. See him there. Look at him. There he sits. It's a picture of misery. It's a picture of gloom. Here is a man who desperately needs a miracle in his life. There are those sitting here today. Same way. There they sit in their darkness, in a life of emptiness, desperately needing a miracle in their lives. But content in his blindness, knowing no other way of life. And there are people here today, you are lost, but you are content in your unsaved condition, and you know no other way of life. You've lived your whole life unsaved. You know no different. It's hard to convince you that you're missing anything. But there he is, in the darkness, begging. Just trying to survive another day. But this day would be different from all other days in his life. We read in verse 1 that Jesus passed by. Jesus came to where he is. And he did so for this blind man, that the works of God should be made manifest in him. He came that day to do the works of him that sent him. So Jesus has come to where this man is. Jesus, the one in whom there is no condition, there is no situation, there is no circumstance, there is no problem, there is no difficulty, there is no trial, there is no disease, there is no plague, there is no wound, there is no affliction, there is no need that He is not the answer for. And Jesus has come to where this man is. It is declared in verse 1 that He saw this man. Again, in a very special way. And He saw him in his condition. Blind from his birth. He saw him in his darkness. He saw him in his poverty. Jesus is the light. And He has come to this man's place of darkness. This man did not see Him. Jesus saw him. And Jesus knew that he was blind from birth. This man did not see Jesus, and this man did not know Jesus. But Jesus saw him. And Jesus knew him. And he was there to fix this man's life. He was there to transform this man's life. We read in verse 6 that Jesus spat on the ground. Seems unusual. So there's the man in his blindness. Jesus is standing looking at him, and Jesus spits on the ground. And then no doubt Jesus bent down to the man's level and he begins to take that spit and the dirt and began to make mud. And he's on the level of this blind man and he applies it to his eyes. This blind man cannot see what Jesus is doing. But don't tell me he didn't feel the touch of Jesus' hands upon his eyes. Oh, he felt it. He's never felt anything like it. The gracious, merciful hands of the Lord upon his sightless eyes. He could feel that. And then Jesus gave a command, which was really asking for a response of faith. He said, go wash in the pool of Siloam. You need to wash that mud out of your eyes. You know, you read the commentaries on why Jesus made mud, and it's almost humorous. The ideas that people come up with. So why? Why did Jesus spit on the ground, get down, and take that spit and dirt and make mud and put it in the man's eyes? I don't know. I don't believe any of the commentators know either. I don't know. Doesn't really matter. And we read that this blind man went his way, therefore. That is because Jesus told him to. That's faith, by the way. And he watched. And he came, seeing. This man who had lived in darkness his entire life has been changed. He is blind no more. He came seeing. But notice the change that Jesus made in this man's life was recognized without this man saying a word. Verse 8, they which had before seen him that he was blind. They knew what he was like before. And as they see him coming, they can tell he's not blind anymore. They could see a difference in him. And they ask in astonishment amongst themselves, is not this he that sat and begged? And then there was an argument that took place amongst the people. Some said, it's him. It's him. I know it's him. Others said, no, it can't be. It's someone who looks like him. And they're arguing back and forth. And the man said, I'm he. It's me. It's the one you saw sitting there blind and begging. It's me. Well, that led to the question. How did this change take place? And you read through John chapter 9. I counted 15 times, one way or another, we are told that this man was blind and now saw. 15 times. Whether it be the Pharisees or the blind man or the blind man's parents, it is confirmed over and over a change has taken place in this man's life. The man's neighbors confirmed by asking him, how were thine eyes opened? The blind man himself confirmed, I received sight. In verse 15, I washed and do see. In verse 25, I was blind. Now I see. Verse 30, he hath opened mine eyes. He did it. The man's parents confirmed in verse 21, by what means he now seeth, we know not, or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. The Pharisees, they confirm the man's healing by asking his parents, how then doth he now see? And in verse 15, by their questions to the blind man, they asked how he had received sight. And in verse 17, what sayest thou of him that he hath opened thine eyes? And in verse 26, how opened he thine eyes? The scriptures leave no doubt that this man was blind, that this man now sees, and that it was Jesus who made it all happen. Very clear. The man testifies of Jesus. Those who knew him in verse 10 ask in absolute astonishment, how were thine eyes opened? How were thine eyes opened? What happened to you? Tell us how you can now see. And the man responds with great excitement and no doubt with great passion. And he says, a man that is called Jesus. You ask, how do I see a man that is called Jesus? He says it was Jesus. This man knew that it was not of himself that he was blind no more. How do you see? Well, every day I've been sitting here, I've been doing eye exercises. And now I can see. He says, no, it was Jesus. Every day I've been sitting here, I've been begging for money. And eventually I collected enough money and was able to pay for sight. No, he knew better. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Well, as I sat here by the temple, and all you religious people pass by every day, I became religious, and now I can see. No, it was Jesus. There was no formula of man. He was blind no more. And it was Jesus. And I'm not unsaved anymore. It was Jesus that has made the difference. So he was blind, but now he sees. Man wants an explanation. There is no medical explanation for this. There is no natural explanation. There is no psychological explanation. The only explanation is Jesus. And you and I that are saved, there is no explanation outside of it was Jesus. It was Jesus. My grandmother prayed for me, but that's not why I was saved. It was Jesus. Mom brought me to church, but that's not why I was saved. It was Jesus. And he says, a man that is called Jesus. And don't you think when he said those words at that very moment, who was the most important thing in his life? This man named Jesus. Nothing more important to him. He knew that it was Jesus, and there was no room for anything else. I thank God today, I didn't then, but I thank God today for every person who ever told me of my need of a Savior. But I realize that there is room for nothing else than Jesus. They didn't save me. If they did, I'm in trouble. It was Jesus. This man has gone from being a blind beggar and not knowing who Jesus was to seeing and realizing it was Jesus. It was Jesus. So after these folks who were acquainted with him asked their question, received their answer, they bring the man to the Pharisees. And the Pharisees questioned him in verse 15. And in verse 16, they speak in a very derogatory way of Jesus. They said, this man that you say opened your eyes, we want you to know he's a sinner. He's wicked. Verse 17, they asked him a question. What sayest thou of him? What's your opinion of him? And he said, he's a prophet. He's a prophet. What that simply means is he's sent from God. He says, I don't know much about him. You all say he's a sinner. I don't know much about him, but I do know this. He's from God. That I know. He knew more than the Pharisees, than the religious crowd. He's a prophet. What he's saying is, this man Jesus, he's no ordinary man. I don't know much about him, but he's no ordinary man. He's extraordinary. After the Pharisees questioned the man, they questioned his parents. They asked him, is this your son? Yes, he's our son. Was he born blind? Yes, he was born blind. Well, how did he get to see? They're afraid that they're going to get thrown out of the temple. So they said, he's of age. Ask him. You imagine they're thinking, we've already talked to him. We really don't want to talk to him again. But they did. verse 21, verse 24, they called the man that was blind. That is, into the temple. And in his hearing, they accused Jesus of being a sinner. And again, this man, not knowing much about him at this point, says, verse 25, I know one thing. I was blind, and now I see. He's saying, I'm not going to get into a theological debate with you. I know one thing. I was blind, and now I see. And what he's saying is, and it was him that did it. No matter what you say about him, I know I was blind, and I know that he gave me sight. It was Jesus. They again ask in verse 26, what did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? And we see his response in verse 27 and verse 28. And he asked them, I have told you already, and ye did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Are you going to listen to me? Now, the reason you're asking these questions is because you want to be his disciple. So what's he saying? He's saying that he's a disciple of the Lord now. In verse 29, we know, or verse 28, then they reviled him and said, thou art his disciple. He's now a follower of Jesus. We're disciples of Moses. You see, when you realize that it was Jesus, you'll be his disciple. That's all you have to realize. Go back to the day of salvation and realize that it was him. How can you not follow him? Verse 35, well, we see in the meantime they've had enough of this man and they throw him out of the temple. Verse 35, Jesus comes to him again. In verse 36, or verse 35, the last part, Jesus says, dost thou believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he? But notice how he addressed this one named Jesus. By the way, this is the first time he's seen Jesus. Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. I'm him. This man now has clearly manifested to him who Jesus is. And what does he do? He believes in verse 38, and he worshiped him. When you realize it was Jesus, I'm afraid there's a lot of people who make profession of salvation. If they are saved, they need to come to this realization. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that saved my hell-deserving soul. And when you realize that truth, you will worship. We need to come to the house of God every time the doors are open, realizing this truth. It was Jesus. There was a time that I had absolutely no desire. In fact, I found it repulsive to go to a church. But now I take great delight in the way driving over here, pulling in the parking lot, unlocking the door and walking in. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. That needs to be our answer to a lost world. lost world says, what happened to you? You don't have to tell them your life history. Just tell them it was Jesus. It was Jesus. Why do you go to church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday? Well, I was raised that way. Shame on you. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Oh, may our life be marked by a man that is called Jesus. He is the one who made a difference in my earthly life and in my eternity. It was Jesus. You're here and lost. You're like that blind man. You've been in this condition since you came into this world. You know no different. You know no different. And you're content in your unsaved condition. You say, well, how do you know I'm content in my unsaved condition? Because you're still in it. You're still in it. You're content there. Oh, that Jesus would come to where you are. See you with that special eye of tenderness, and grace, and mercy. Seeing you as you are. Blind by birth. Blind from birth. Seeing you as you are, filthy, wicked before God. But He's come to do the will, the works of Him that sent Him. Thou shalt call His name Jesus, for He shall save. That's His work. Oh, that He would come to where you are today and save your soul. There are those here we know are unsaved. And many in this church pray, Lord, save their soul. Lord, save their soul. We long for that day to come. But be sure of this. When it does come, and we pray that it does, it wasn't our prayers that saved your soul. It was Jesus. And that's why we want to serve Him. It was Jesus. You need no other reason. You need no other argument. If Jesus saved your soul, you ought to follow Him. You ought to worship Him. Aren't you glad today? A man called Jesus. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.